Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today, ready to run down the top news from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. We'll provide grain market analysis and the Indiana Farm Forecast as well on today's show. This past week was State Convention Week for the Indiana FFA organization. We have plenty of FFA coverage coming up. We'll have a crop update on the way as well. Crop conditions are variable around the state, perhaps more so this year than ever before. And we'll discuss how you can get involved in the ag political process. Indiana Farm Bureau has provided an easy way to help get ag-friendly candidates elected. Let's begin with the 96th Indiana FFA State Convention that was held on the Purdue University campus this week. It really got underway in earnest Monday in Montgomery County at Southmont High School, where a number of CDEs and LDEs were presented. Those continued on Tuesday along with this year's Indiana FFA Community Service Project. Caitlin Marcheski, a recent graduate from Tri-Central High School near Sharpsville in Tipton County, spoke with Hoosier Ag Today about how the project is in line with FFA's Living to Serve motto.
At Southmont High School, we have FFA members from all over the state coming together to do the Million Meals Challenge. So they're packing meals for their local communities, and these meals will be spread out throughout all of Indiana, all of our counties, really trying to make an impact. Our motto is learning to do, doing to learn, earning to live, and living to serve. And so the community service projects like this are ways that we can really live out the last part of that motto and something that we as FFA members love doing.
Fast forward then to Thursday afternoon, Caitlin Marcheski spoke with us again, this time after she had taken the reins as the new president of the Indiana FFA organization. I asked her to describe her emotions immediately following the final general session.
It's indescribable the amount of gratitude I feel right now for Indiana FFA as an organization and for all of the delegates and all the people who were able to make State Convention possible. We truly couldn't have done it without so many sponsors, supporters, and volunteers, and I'm just eternally grateful for this moment and this organization.
You get a year to be the Indiana FFA state president to kind of leave your mark. What goals do you have here over the course of the next year for Indiana FFA and for you personally?
I think one of the biggest goals is just to impact Indiana FFA in any way we can. Like you said, we only get a year, so we need to pack that year full of impactful moments and really making every second matter and making meaning out of every moment.
What led you to want to be president of Indiana FFA, a state officer for Indiana FFA? What's gotten you here?
The community of people around me supporting me are absolutely what's gotten me here. All of the supporters, family, friends, and community members that have rallied around me throughout this process and throughout my last 4 years as an FFA member have gotten me to this moment, and it just means so much to be able to be here and have those people around me.
Caitlin Marcheski, the new president of Indiana FFA, congratulations to you and to your teammates, and good luck this next year.
Thank you so much.
In addition to Marcheski, this year's state officers include State Secretary Lauren Argate from Lebanon, Northern Region VP Ariana Vela from Prairie Heights, Southern Region VP Calvin Myers from Bloomfield's FFA chapter, State Treasurer Lily Sloan from Jennings County, reporter Jenna Lawler from Rushville, and this year's Sentinel Jesus Santana from North Miami. Congratulations again to the new FFA state officer team. Be sure to catch the hat video with Marcheski on our Facebook page at Hoosier Ag Today. We'll have more from the Indiana FFA State Convention later on in the show. President Trump struck a win for the ethanol industry and corn growers last week when he signed a congressional resolution to rescind California's electric vehicle mandate. California vows to sue the Trump administration, but for now, a Biden-era waiver that allowed the state to phase out the sale of new gas-powered cars by 2035 has been rescinded. President Trump signed the congressional measure ending the California ban and that of 11 other states and D.C. that followed California.
You couldn't buy any other car except an electric powered car. And in California, they have blackouts and brownouts. They don't have enough electricity right now to do the job. And countrywide, you'd have to spend $4 trillion to build the firing plants, charging plants, firing plants.
California argued that its rule would benefit both public health and the environment by reducing emissions, but the ethanol industry warned early on that the huge California market for lower emission corn ethanol would evaporate.
If that is in fact what happens, yeah, it's going to have some far-reaching impacts on the fuel market And by extension, it's going to have an impact on the corn market.
That's Renewable Fuels Association President Jeff Cooper.
California is the single largest consumer of gasoline when you look at all 50 states, and the single largest consumer of ethanol.
Trump also signed resolutions to overturn California rules that require most new trucks sold in the state to also be electric. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. You're listening to Hoosier Ag This Week. Thanks for joining us. The Indiana Farm Forecast with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin is coming up in just a few minutes. But first, let's get grain market analysis. And for that, we say hello to Andy Eubank.
Hi there, Eric. We did have a sell-off on Friday to end the week, a holiday-shortened week. I'll have the final numbers coming up. We'll begin, though, with in-depth analysis. For that, I turn to Carl Setzer on Friday. He is with Consus Ag Consulting. Markets chopped around a good part of the session, and then as we got closer to the close, it appeared that it would indeed be a sell-off as the selling intensified just a bit. So mostly lower after a back-and-forth day. Carl, where did the pressure come from on Friday?
A lot of it came from traders simply moving to the sidelines ahead of the weekend, and really very thin trade today, very low volume. A lot of traders shored up their positions Wednesday afternoon, left the market, and just stayed absent today, given we had closed markets yesterday. Really wanting to watch what their risk exposure is when markets are closed, even for just one day. And now we have a long weekend ahead of us. And it's not just from the weather front. The geopolitical developments really starting to impact the market here a little bit. Traders kind of shuffling off all positions today. We even had gold under pressure as we headed late into the session. Just not a lot of interest in the market, and that real lethargic type attitude just added pressure to futures all session long.
And it seemed as though early in the morning when the export sales report came out, it wasn't going to have much of an impact. Corn and wheat sales in the range of trade, soybeans better than estimates, not a huge number though. So no real impact there?
Yeah, we basically saw those numbers. Just not a lot to build off. We were mostly within expectations, as you said. The big thing is trade continues to look at new crop, and we're not seeing China show up yet. And that is a little bit concerning to the market. As we turn the page into July, if we don't have coverage, it'll be even more concerning. China really moving to a hand-to-mouth buyer, though, so I don't know as if we should definitely hit the panic button, but trade will start to show a little more concern.
Carl Setzer there, Consus Ag Consulting. His number is 989-506-1587. Now, final numbers from Friday trade, down almost a nickel on July corn, 4.28¾. September, 4.25½, losing 3½ cents. Dees down 2¾, 4.41¼. 6¾ lower July beans, ending at 10.68. August 10.71½, down a nickel and a quarter. November down 7½ cents, 10.60¾. And the July wheat loses 6½ cents, dipping to 5.67¾. Meats mixed. August live cattle 209.82, down 185. July lean hogs 60 cents higher, 112.77. And there is a snapshot of the markets for you on the weekend show. Much more still to come. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
If you think about the popcorn itself, it has a really strong kind of halo of health around it. Now, if you throw a bunch of oil and salt on it, that can right. change the dynamic a little bit. But it's a relatively high fiber grain. It's naturally non-GMO, gluten-free. So a lot of the trends in terms of just the base popcorn commodity, it checks a lot of those boxes for consumers maybe looking for a healthier snack relative to other things that are out there. So I think there were a lot of different combinations depending on the segment of what was driving growth. But I think just at the end of the day, a really high quality product with good values always going to perform.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
A warm weekend unfolding across the Hoosier State. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's weekend weather outlook, and here's what we've got going on here. First of all, dry weather. After some of the rain and severe weather that we saw earlier this week, we're going to be settling in for a very warm but very dry period. No threat of precipitation at all for Saturday or Sunday. I'll extend that dry pattern on into next week, Monday and Tuesday. Southwest flow is going to be here. I think we're pretty breezy off and on through the weekend, but temperatures will be above normal. It's going to be some of the warmest air that we've seen so far. And again, that warm air holds into the start of next week as well. We want to fast forward now to Wednesday. Wednesday during the daytime hours, we are mostly dry, but well, actually, let's back up a little bit. From the Monday, Tuesday time frame forward here, we're seeing significant moisture coming out of Nebraska, moving across northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, through Wisconsin, and into the Great Lakes. Michigan to our north, going to be seeing on again, off again rain showers Monday, Tuesday. Well, that band of moisture finally is going to start to move likely on Wednesday. I don't think we see anything here during the day, but as we move through the Wednesday late afternoon, evening, and overnight, I look for scattered rain showers to try and shift southward into northern Indiana. They're not going to be huge, and I don't think we see a large scale batch of strong to severe weather, but I do think a little bit of moisture is going to be here, anywhere from a few hundredths to half an inch over about a 12 to 18 hour stretch. By the time we get to a late Thursday, we're clearing out again. We should be partly to mostly sunny, very warm and dry for Friday and for Saturday. And then late Saturday evening and overnight into Sunday, another frontal boundary starts to break free and move south. This one has a little bit better threat of thunderstorms with it, and I do think it gets through the entire state. So through Sunday the 29th with showers and thunderstorms with about 75 to 80% coverage, quarter to 1 inch potential there. This kicks off a little bit more instability as we go into the following week. The week of the 30th, we're going to be flipping the calendar from June into July. Large area of low pressure over the upper Midwest to start that week off on Monday the 30th. Scattered showers and thunderstorms all across Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Great Lakes, and down into Indiana. I think that gives us a good run of moisture for that 30th into the first time frame. But what it also does is opens the door to some significantly colder air. Cooler air comes back in to start the month of July, and as we head toward the July 4th holiday weekend, I am expecting below normal temperatures, significantly below normal temperatures, especially Michigan, northern Indiana, and northern Ohio for the 3rd into the 4th. Gear up for that. It's going to be a roller coaster ride on temperatures here over the next 2 to 3 weeks. I'm meteorologist Ryan Martin.
Season-long sulfur availability can be a reality for your crop when you apply Micro Essentials from Mosaic. Micro Essentials contains two forms of sulfur: sulfate to satisfy early season crop demand, and elemental sulfur to feed your crop throughout grain fill. Micro Essentials is the mighty micro supercharging your yields as much as 3.4 to 6.5 bushels per acre over commodity, MAP, and sulfur blends. Contact your local ag retailer and ask for Micro Essentials from Mosaic for season-long sulfur.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and all this week throughout the 96th Indiana FFA State Convention, students from all across the state are being recognized for Career Development Events, or CDEs. These are special projects that FFA members work on throughout the year, and then they compete against each other at the state and national conventions. One of the CDE categories is for agricultural education. It's for those who might be interested in becoming an ag teacher.
When I went on stage, I didn't really know what to expect. And then as he kind of went down the line and I realized I was first place, it was kind of a big relief.
And that's Morgan Martin, who recently graduated from Danville Community High School. She was named the winner of this year's Agricultural Education CDE.
So I had to write a lesson plan centered around a food science lesson. And the food science lesson I chose was food preservation. We did a gallery walk where they went around and learned about different methods of food preservation. And then we came back together, ate some food, tested our knowledge on the different types of food preservation, and ended our lesson with an exit ticket just for a summation of what we learned for the day.
Is Morgan planning on becoming an ag teacher?
As of now, the plan is not to study agricultural education, but we will see what happens in the next 4 years.
But she still plans to study agriculture at college.
So I will be attending Huntington University in the fall of 2025 to dual major in animal science and crop science and agronomy, with the hopes of pursuing education in genetics to hopefully get into the agriculture genetics field.
So what advice does Morgan have for those wanting to win the Ag Education CDE next year?
It might sound simple, but prepare yourself. This was kind of a long time coming. I participated in a supervised agricultural experience throughout the summer where I was the volunteer program coordinator for the Hendricks County Ag Experience, where I was educating people in the public. So if this is something that you're looking to do or hoping to compete in or hoping to win, I would say prepare yourself, build yourself up, get that experience before going to the contest room.
Check out more of my conversation with Morgan Martin with Danville FFA. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Our coverage of the 96th Indiana FFA State Convention, presented by McDonald's of Greater Indiana. Another CDE that was handed out this past week was for Agricultural Communications, which was awarded to Southmont High School in Montgomery County. Eric Pfeiffer caught up with the winning team this past week.
So first things first, introduce yourself for our listeners.
I'm Kelsey Thompson.
I'm Kylie Reeves.
I'm Amra Shannon.
And I'm Sophia Shannon.
Kelsey, talk to me about what the Agricultural Communications CDE is all about, what it took to become champions.
We work as a team to create a communications plan for any sort of organization that they present to us. So at the beginning, we sit through a press conference where we're able to ask questions, and then we all go and we do our own thing, which consists of I do a social media plan, Kylie designs a magazine, Sophia makes a broadcasting video, and Amy writes an article that goes in the magazine. And so together we put that all together, we write up our communications plan justification, and then we also take a general knowledge test about all things communications.
Sounds an awful lot like what we do. I mean, this is good stuff.
Once again, Eric Pfeiffer at the convention. Congratulations once again to Southmont FFA. You can watch the video of Eric's interview with the Southmont FFA winning team. It's at Hoosier Ag Today's Facebook page. Well, throughout the 96th Indiana FFA State Convention, sure, there were a lot of students and FFA chapters who were recognized, but there's also an award for Indiana's Ag Educator of the Year. It's called the Golden Owl Award, and this year it was given to Mr. Jim Wildermuth, the Ag Educator and FFA Advisor at North Miami High School.
First thought was just very humbling, standing up there with a lot of very well-deserving other ag teachers and knowing that it came from a community nomination to start with and just students. So just very overwhelmingly humbling experience.
Congratulations to Jim, who not only received a trophy, but also a $3,000 donation to benefit the ag program at North Miami Schools. You can hear much more from Jim. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, during last week's Indiana FFA State Convention, 5 of your 7 new Indiana FFA state officers are women. And that includes the new Indiana FFA president, Caitlin Marcheski. However, no woman had served as a state officer in Indiana until 1974. And that very first woman was Debbie Michael Courtner. She was a reporter for the Indiana FFA state officer team 50 years ago. Back then, she was Debbie Michael and first got into FFA as a student at Plymouth High School in Marshall County.
Girls were allowed to be in FFA or take even ag classes back in 1969. When I was a freshman in 1970, the ag teacher approached me about taking ag classes and joining FFA.
She tells Hoosier Ag Today she faced a number of different challenges at that time.
Number one, the jacket wasn't designed for girls. It was a guy's cut. As with anything, there's always obstacles of people really not believing that females have a role in agriculture. But if you look at it today, it's a pretty dominant field that's being held, you know, by females. And it's just not farming, because agriculture has spread, you know, into other diverse fields that's for men and women.
Debbie says she's encouraged to see the number of women who are taking leadership roles today, not just in FFA, but in the ag industry as a whole.
I'm glad to see, you know, that there's a lot of women taking interest in agriculture, and I'm glad that the men in the field also take the fact that, you know, women have something to say.
Check out Debbie's story. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. As we pivot now from your Indiana FFA to the Indiana Pacers, Sunday night, it all comes down to Game 7 of the NBA Finals. The Pacers head back to Oklahoma City to face the Thunder for the final time, and whoever wins Sunday night takes home the NBA championship. And for the final time, as my pal, the late, great Bobby Slick Leonard would say,
"Boom, baby! Turn out the lights! The party's over."
Boom, baby, indeed. Go Pacers! I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Are you a retail agronomist or crop consultant looking to stay ahead in your field? Mark your calendars for August 4th through 6th and join retail leaders and agronomists in Indianapolis for the Agronomy Conference and Expo. This event is tailored for retail agronomists with can't-miss sessions on sustainability, nutrient management, and the latest industry trends. Network with top industry leaders and gain valuable insights to take back to your business. As part of their commitment to nutrient stewardship, the Fertilizer Institute is offering complimentary registration when you choose the code Hoosier. Don't miss out on this opportunity centered on ag retail to expand agronomic knowledge, network with peers, and discover new market opportunities. Visit tfi.org/events and use the code Hoosier in all caps to secure your complimentary spot at the Agronomy Conference and Expo, August 4th through 6th in Indy.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Ask two farmers who are neighbors how the crops are doing, and you might get two very different answers. Here's Andy Eubank.
Variable crop conditions are nothing new, but this year there is variance on steroids in some parts of the Corn Belt. In a Channel Seed growing season update, Shad Skank with Indiana Specialty Group and a seed pro for Channel Seed says it is like nothing he has seen.
I've never seen this before in the 34 years that I've done it, but on my north part of my area is a little bit dry. They were very thankful for that rain last night. In the center, it looks really good. Some of the best crops I've seen. Into the south, it has been wet and late planted. And if you go farther south of my area, it's even more of a struggle. So it is all over the board from one extreme to the other.
You know, that's amazing. That is a lot of variance. And we're not talking about a huge area.
You think I would be saying that and talking about South Dakota to Indiana, and I'm not. I'm talking about Benton County to Hendricks County.
Tuesday night and Wednesday morning rains were much needed for parts of Skank's area, which covers a 50-mile radius from Montgomery County in west central Indiana.
Tiles are just starting to work. The crop that got planted early is taking that water really well. Of course, some farms take water better than others. If they're drained well, however that might be with pattern tiled or just normal slope of the farm. But that does bring, the rain does bring possibility of disease. And we want to protect this crop as much as we possibly can and keep it healthy all the way through, because we need every bushel that everyone can get.
Tar spot is the disease everyone is concerned about, and he says for some, a second round of fungicide is coming soon.
A lot of my customers did a half rate, 4 to 6 ounces of a fungicide that helps protect the plant. Some people did some things at planting, and the next chance and window then will be at tassel, which actually, Andy, we're going to be seeing tassels come out here on, you know, a lot of the 105 to 108 day corn planted in the middle of April here very shortly, within 2 weeks for sure.
He tells Hat the potential on a lot of farms is great for 2025. Hear more in the full Hat and Channel Seed growing season update at HoosierAgToday.com and our free mobile app. I'm Andy Eubank.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins announced Wednesday that USDA would be reestablishing a new world screwworm sterile fly facility at Moore Air Base in South Texas to protect the U.S. from the spread of the pest from Mexico. This facility was used in the 1960s to help eradicate a screwworm infestation at that time. National Cattlemen's Beef Association President Buck Wehrbein was at the announcement and told the Beltway Beef podcast.
We've had issues with getting the flies distributed in southern Mexico, and so there's been a change from, instead of bringing them from Panama, where they're creating 100 million of them a week, to Moore Air Force Base, staging them there and then delivering them, and that will be a big help.
It's estimated that upwards of 300 million sterile flies must be propagated per week to combat the screwworm, Wehrbein says USDA has formed a detailed plan to overwhelm the dangerous pest.
Secretary Rollins also has committed $21 million to the Mexican government to assist them in getting a facility going down there that could produce 60 to 100 million flies a week.
Wehrbein says Rollins and her team at USDA have already put a lot of work into keeping the screwworm out of the United States.
We're grateful that she is, in my view, listening, but more importantly than that, hearing us, and she understands the urgency of this.
And Wehrbein says that the longest journey begins with a single step, and this is one of the early steps in what he's afraid will be a long journey. And finally today, an easy way to get involved in the ag political process, because policy matters. It can impact your farming operation positively or negatively each and every day. That's why it's important for you to get involved in that process, and one way to do it is by supporting a political action committee, or PAC.
A PAC is really the organization that raises money to help contribute to a specific cause.
That's Colette Childress, Indiana Farm Bureau's Director of Political Development. Indiana Farm Bureau has two PACs, Elect and Ag-Elect.
So Farm Bureaus obviously helps advocate and raise money to help contribute to political groups and political candidates with the interest of agriculture and all things rural.
Childress says these PACs are intended to make sure that farmers' voices are heard. But in order to be heard, you have to share your voice. She encourages you to get involved.
Sometimes sharing your voice means attending a roundtable, means showing up at the state house, means giving, you know, $5, $50, helping host a fundraiser in your living room or in your backyard with hot dogs and soda or beer. I mean, it doesn't have to be this elaborate thing that you see on a Netflix show, right? Giving and contributing and getting involved and getting those candidates elected and in leadership positions is incredibly important to not only our members, but the state.
The Indiana Farm Bureau PAC. PACs are nonpartisan. Childress says the PACs have supported both Democrat and Republican candidates who support agricultural priorities.
We see food as not being a divisive topic. Food should unite everyone. I think some of the best conversations we've all had individually happen around the dinner table. It's important to us to make sure that we're growing not only leadership, but also food and energy across the state.
To learn more about Indiana Farm Bureau's political action committees, how you can get involved, or to donate, visit their website, infarmbureau.org. There's a link on our website as well, HoosierAgToday.com. And that does it for this edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. We thank you for joining us. We'll do it again next weekend, same hat time, same hat channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.